Is this mic on?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Good morning, and welcome to the January 29, 2015 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. Madam Secretary, would you call the roll, please?
Commissioner Harrison?
Here.
Commissioner Meyer?
Here.
Commissioner Campbell?
Here.
Chairman Topping?
Here.
Please let it be noted that Commissioner Irving is absent.
All right. Would you all please stand with me for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We now welcome public comment period for things not on today's agenda. If there's anybody that would like to provide a public comment, please complete a speaker slip form. We've got that, which is available and provided to the commission. And please limit your comments to 3 minutes and state your name.
Thank you, Chairman Topping. Good morning. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I wanted to visit with you a little bit this morning about a project that's going to come before you in the not-too-distant future. I'm sure you'll hear from staff about that in updates. It's the Phillips 66 Rail Spur Extension Project at the refinery, Willow Road and Highway 1. And as you may also know, there's a recirculated draft environmental impact report. And I'd like to direct your attention particularly to Chapter 9, which deals with the provision of public access. And in part, this chapter was a result of the prior project from Phillips 66, the throughput project. Some of you may recall that. This new access would be possible, and it would provide direct access to the ODSVRA, or the Oceano Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area. I would suggest to you that this is possibly one of the most important issues facing South County in the near term. Yesterday, the Air Pollution Control District further considered their Rule 1001 concerning the particulate matter reduction plan, and there may be a correlation between the access point where it is today at Pier Avenue and a possible new access point at Phillips 66. That is a correlation between vehicle miles traveled along the beach to access the recreation area and then a possible reduction in dust generation. So it's an ongoing question, but a very important one. You also may know that Wednesday, February 11th, the California Coastal Commission will be in town. They'll be at the Cliffs in Pismo Beach. And on Wednesday afternoon, they'll be considering the coastal development permit that was issued in 1982 for the OHV. They'll be considering condition compliance for that permit. And again, that meeting is Wednesday, the 11th of February at the Cliffs. One of the conditions, the special conditions in that 1982 permit, talks about Pier Avenue only being a temporary access. And they were looking to a new southerly access, and Phillips 66 presents that possibility. I'd also mention a report, Condor Environmental 2006 State Park Commission report. Staff can probably help you with that regarding an alternative access analysis. The big picture has many moving parts, but part of that you will hear presumably this spring in the Phillips 66 Rail Spur Extension Project. And at that time, I think it's important to consider all of the ramifications of a potential new access at this location. Thank you very much, and I am available for questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Anybody have any questions? Okay. We'll now ask staff for planning staff updates. Ms. Carroll.
Good morning. Ellen Carroll from the Planning Department. The updates, really, that I have for you just are about future items coming up on your agendas. And remember, all of these are tentatively scheduled on future agendas. We do have, although February 5th is out, so February 5th is not tentative. These are actually on the agenda. The rest of them are are tentative. So February 5th is your next hearing date. We do have three items on that day. We have the Renewable Energy Streamlining Program. We have the Los Politas Project, which is the mine that was continued to that date. And then there's a winery project, Halter Winery. Your next date after that is February 26th. And again, you have the Renewable Energy Streamlining Program and a winery project on that agenda. And then there's also a consent item that is a general plan conformity report. Then in March, your first hearing in March will be on March 12th. And at this point, we have one hearing item so far on that date. And like I said before, these are all tentative. And that is a general plan amendment for the Santa Margarita Cemetery. Then your next hearing after that is March 26th. And at this point, we have three projects scheduled for that hearing date. A winery conditional use permit, the Harbor Terrace project, which is a coastal development permit, and then also one other project that's an expansion of an existing winery. Those are all tentative. That's the thing as far as I should go. You will have meetings in April. We just don't have detailed information on what will be on those meetings in April.
Can you just for the sake of the public that might be coming on February 5th, can you give the order of the agenda? Which is it? Do we know whether streamlining, Los Politas, or Halter?
You know, we have the order. See, I don't have the agenda in front of me.
The current order. I can answer that.
Okay.
The current order is the Halter Winery first, and then
renewable energy streamlining, and then second. Los Politas. We're going to discuss. We haven't finalized that order yet, and so when we do, we will send out an email to folks to let them know.
And that will be available on the online agenda.
Right. Okay. Right.
The issue there is getting two EIR discussions fit in carefully and completely within the time frame.
Right.
And also, a lot of folks will be back on Las Politas.
Right. And so we will make sure and send an email out to folks, and we'll also, the agenda is posted online, and we will put a note similar to the email online as to what the intended order would be if it's different than the agenda.
Great. We greatly appreciate your filling us in on the potential items that are coming forward, and we encourage you to continue to do that.
We will.
Okay, great. We have one consent agenda item consisting of the January 8 minutes. Does anybody wish to pull that for discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I would move to approve.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded. Ramona, could you call the roll?
Commissioner Harrison?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I got it out of order. No. Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Chairman Topping?
Here. I mean, yes. I'm still catching up, obviously. Okay, with that, we'll move to the hearing item, which is agenda number 4, Belridge Park. Ramona, could you please introduce this hearing item?
This is a continued hearing to consider a request by Belridge Park 2 LLC for a lot line adjustment and tract map with conditional use permit. County file number SUB 2013-00042, tract 3059, and SUB 2014-00017, COAL 14-0081. Supervisorial District 4, Stephanie Fuse, Project Manager.
Are there any ex parte contacts to report on this matter?
Yes, I spoke with a representative of the applicant.
Any other? No? Okay. Then in that case, Stephanie Fuse, would you please give the staff report.
Sure. Thank you, Chairman, members of the Commission. Stephanie Fuse from County Planning. This project was continued from the December 11th meeting in order to address certain issues, primarily drainage, grading, lot layout, and road improvements. Just to remind you, this project is a combination lot line adjustment, track map, and conditional use permit. It's located on Haas Lane, which is here, and South Elm Street in the community of Oceano. So since the December 11th Planning Commission meeting, a new preliminary grading and drainage plan was submitted. Previously, the drainage basins were along lots 5 through 8 were located in the rear of the parcels, and that has been revised to be in the front of those parcels. And there is a retaining wall along the northern property boundary that's between 2 and 3 feet, with which will have a 5-foot fence on the top. And this is a look at the tentative track map that was submitted, and it shows the lot layouts, lots 1 through 14. Lot 13 is the park parcel, and lot 14 is the actual road serving the parcels. And the other concern that was raised during the December 11th meeting was road improvements. And this turnaround that's located on lot 13 reflects the fire authority's approved design. And the detached sidewalk was not part of the proposal in order to have the improvements match what's existing on adjoining properties. So with that, staff is recommending approval of the project based on the findings and conditions, with some minor modifications that I handed out this morning to condition 14 of the tract to clarify some drainage wording, and then to add a condition 29I regarding maintenance of the street, well, not maintenance of the street, but to have the on-street parking. It's not part of the tract. There is no on-street parking allowed.
Thank you, Stephanie. Do any members of the commission have questions for Ms. Hughes presently? If not...
Yeah, I do have a question.
Oh, sure. Okay, Commissioner Harrison.
I visited the site. It looks to me like that there's quite a bit of difference in the elevation to the south and the elevation to the north. Right now, the north has about a 3-foot retaining wall with a wood fence on top of it. And then you're going to put another wall on top of that. Do you have a grading plan to show what the level of the pads are going to be for the buildings? Are they going to be the same level on both sides of the street, or is one side going to be higher?
From these lots here to these lots? Or you're talking about the ones along...
We'll need that on the screen. We don't know which.
Oh, sorry.
We don't have it. Here we go.
Along these lots here to these lots?
Yes. What's the difference in elevation in those lots?
I'm not entirely sure. Perhaps the applicant would know that.
Okay.
Okay, we'll be hearing from the applicant.
And how are you going to keep the vehicles from parking on the street, the actual vehicles that are in this area?
Well, we did add the condition 29I to say no on street parking. If they do park on the street, it will block the road because the road is fairly narrow. It will become a safety issue that probably the fire authority or perhaps our code enforcement will have to get involved in.
Is there a no parking condition for the subdivision directly behind this?
It's the Avocado Ranch. I would assume there is, but I wasn't the project manager on that, so I'm not.
The reason I ask is because the roads there seem to be the same size here, and when you drive down them in the middle of the day, it is not easy to get by all the parked cars. So I just was curious about.
Yeah, I had the same question.
And you only allow for 3 additional parking spaces for visitors to this, and you've got 12 homes, and only three of them can have visitors at one time with a car? I just have a problem with the park.
You know they're going to have birthday parties and Christmas and Thanksgiving and on and on and on. People do that.
Yes,
it's part of life. So
okay, well,
anyway, that's a couple questions.
Any other questions, Commissioner Harrison? I share a similar observation and concern, but we can come back and visit this some more after we hear from the applicant.
That's fine.
Okay. In that case, would the applicant like to make a presentation? And I think, have you already filled out a speaker slip? If not, would you please do so when you finish?
Certainly.
Yeah.
Good morning, Commissioners. Casey O'Connor, applicant. Wasn't necessarily prepared to speak this morning. I didn't think that I thought we had already resolved most of our issues. But number one, as far as the parking goes, Avocado Ranch, the original one that's 46 homes, has been well received. I drive through there daily. The only cars that are I generally ever see parked in the street are construction traffic while we're still finishing up the last two homes on the project. Absolutely. If there is construction project, it's usually down toward the end, and it is, you know, somewhat difficult to get around. We try to monitor that daily. Driving through the project, I very rarely see any cars that are parked in the street and not in somebody's driveway or in the guest parking. I'd like to clarify that, and I don't know what instances I've seen cars parked in the street. Absolutely, there is no parking on the streets. It's a condition. It was a condition of the original subdivision also. As far as the guest parking, that's county code or county requirements. We can certainly look, and I'm certain we can add another guest parking spot or two, which I would have no problem in doing, but we're following the guidelines set forth by planning staff. So to answer that. Now, to your other question, sir, about the grading, if the map was back up there, we'll dissect the project right behind lot 11, 10, 9, and then 13 is the common area lot, so if you see that one. But right to the south of there, we'll have a retaining wall, and that's approximately 5'6". From bottom of footing to, or from bottom to the top of the wall. The preliminary drainage and grading plan and the track map should show the elevations. We have lowered the dirt. We have lowered the site on lots 5 through 8 to accommodate a much less retaining wall, and it's shown on the sections that we provided. So there's not a wall on top of a wall. Their existing walls for the neighbors on Basin Street is approximately 5.6 feet tall. 5 feet is the average. We're coming in 3 feet, and we're just going to construct a 2 to 3 foot wall along the rear of these properties. So we would not come close in any way to the existing walls that are there. And then through Commissioner Meyer's recommendation and the rest of the commission, we have relocated all of the drainage to the inside of the project, as per Public Works recommendations. So to speak exactly what the elevation of, say, a lot 9 and a lot 10 would be compared to lot 6, 7, and 8, I'd have to look at the map, but I know that they work through engineering. Lot 11 will be slightly taller than lot 10. Lot 13 and lot 9 will be on similar planes. That's all I can speak to off the top of my head for.
Do you have elevations for your top of slab on all these parcels?
There's already proposed for a preliminary one.
But they're not on our. We don't have that. So that may lead to some of the questions.
Okay. Yeah, I mean those will be determined through the process as we go through with Public Works, telling us what we can do and what we can't do, and how the flow will work as far as, you know, drainage. There's so many different components in there that it's hard to tell. I know, though, that the road is slopes gently, and that by the first retaining wall, it gets everything down to, you know, a, a manageable level.
I guess it's just that the confusion on this end seems to be because we've adjusted the drainage from flowing from south to north. Now we're flowing from north to south. So that may or may not have changed the elevation of the road. And the retaining walls in the back, I'm not certain how we can get to the exact height of those retaining walls without knowing where the top of slab is, without knowing a lot of other stuff. And I really honestly don't know enough about subdivision regulations and when the grading plan actually gets submitted and who controls it. And is this normal here? What we're doing? It would seem to be odd to approve a plan without understanding at least how high that retaining wall is going to be for that neighbor, and I don't know whether that 2 feet or 3 feet or 6 feet is legit. Is it? Do you?
This is Frank Henneke with Public Works. It was always presented as all those lots would drain towards the street. The difference from last hearing to this time.
Mr. Honeycutt, I can just barely hear you. Can you get a little closer?
How's that?
Yeah.
The difference between...
Okay. Well, sorry. There you go.
The difference between what we talked about or what was presented last time versus this time wasn't so much which way the lots would drain. They've always been presented as draining towards the street. The difference between last time, though, is that they had underground detention in the back and in the fill, and that seemed problematic, which the applicant recognized right away, and they moved that to the front. So these are only roughly designed at this point. I don't see the retaining wall heights changing from last time.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. O'Connor, do you have additional information that you'd like to provide?
Yes, sir. You had also had a concern about the fire department and wanting to make sure that was what they had designed and what they were okay with. I took it upon myself because Chief Hubert had stepped down from the Five Cities Fire Authority, so I went in and talked to the new gentleman. I think he's second in charge. We went over the plan at length, and they were very satisfied. Just wanted to make sure that you knew that I did do that because you had some concerns about the radius and the hammerhead, so to speak.
Okay. Any other questions at this point for the applicant? We can have some additional discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll lead off with Mr. Meyer.
Real quick, can I just jump in? Is there any additional public comment?
Oh, additional. I'm sorry.
I'm assuming maybe
anybody out here that would like to make additional comments on this project? Apparently not.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Meyer.
Because Commissioner Irving is absent, he asked me to ask a few questions for him, and so I'm just going to run through them. And I kind of prefaced this a little earlier. With Stephanie. On our previous packet from the December 11th version of this meeting, page 1A5 of that packet, bear with me, I've got to go to it, is basically a chart, 1A4, sorry, it shows various and sundry parking design, architectural design, front setbacks, blah blah blah, and it talks about private outdoor open space, and in there it said that each unit contains a minimum of 175 of private open space. So Commissioner Irving would just like us to say 175 square feet there instead of just 175, because that means nothing. Of our current packet, and this gets confusing, but it's page 2 of 10, otherwise known as 4-8. 7A, he wants to know from Public Works that about, does Haas Lane comply with county standards?
I'll get the right button this time. No, the Haas Lane, everything interior to this project will not become a county road. It's not intended to be, and it's not set to county public works standards. In cases like that, it's up. It's between the applicant and the fire chief and the building official to get the road right. So, no, it'll be significantly.
And because it's private, it doesn't isn't required.
Correct.
Okay.
That includes Haas Lane and the outside.
I'm going to get my streets mixed up, but yes, everything except for Elm is a private street.
Okay. So then along those lines, Public Works lines, do we know where the two streetlights are located? Are they located on the plan?
I don't know where they're located. We don't actually have a requirement for those, and so the precise location can be determined during design.
Okay. Are those in the conditions?
Yes, it was part of the OCSD recommendation. It's condition 11 on the tract, page 4-9.
And are they located tentatively?
We don't have the location set yet. They'll be part of the improvement plans when they come through.
Okay, then with respect to inclusionary housing fees, he was wondering which fee applies. Is it the one that was when the tract was submitted, or is it the one just approved by the Board of Supes?
It's, I believe it's a vesting map, so it would be the fees in effect at the time the map was accepted for processing.
And again, going to get a little complicated. 4-12, otherwise known as page 6 of 10. Additional map sheet 28 and then letter J, which states the homeowners association shall be responsible for the operation and maintenance of public frontage, public road frontage, sidewalks, landscaping, street lighting, blah, 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 blah. Bear with me. Is there a bond or guarantee filed between the developer or the county? He wants to know who the property owner is at this point. Is it the individual? Sorry, I'm reading his notes. I'm not quite certain what he's asking. But he thinks that because all this is being hidden on 28J to some degree, which is an additional map sheet, that it's maybe going to be a bit confusing to the new homeowners, perhaps. This is basically, these are... It's hard to interpret somebody else's notes and then try to be articulate about them. Who is the property owner at this point? Is it the individual? Is there a bond or guarantee filed between the developer and the county? This information needs to not be hidden on an additional map sheet.
I might be able to help with that. If you also look at condition 29, the developer needs to come up with covenant CCNRs.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you buy a house, if you buy one of these homes, you have to join that that's tied to the property. However, if you haven't bought the house yet and you're just thinking about it, you do a little research, then you'll come up with a track map, and this additional sheet will clue you into what you're in for. So that additional map sheet, the only thing it does is provide information if you go look for it.
How does the potential buyer... become aware of this?
Well, he has to either look up the track map or read a title report, or if he misses all of that entirely, which I think plenty of people do, they will get to the point where they have to sign on to the CCNRs.
Is there a white paper on this, preliminary public report?
That's getting out of my area. I just know if we were thinking 10, 20 years from now, these things will still exist. As a matter of record, so anybody who wanted to would know what they're in for.
Along those same lines, and he brought this up last time, on page 4-18, which is one of three. But he's talking about 2E on this one, which says each front yard shall contain a minimum of one street tree. And then his question was, does condition 10 apply? And condition 10 is on page 4-20. And condition 10 says landscaping in accordance with the approved landscaping plan shall be installed or bonded for before final building inspection. And basically he's talking about who's going to maintain this tree. And he brought this up last time. Is it the HOA or is it the individual? Because it's on the individual's private parcel, not the common parcel. Stephanie explained to me that it's going to be maintained by the homeowner. But it has to be maintained in perpetuity by the homeowner. And if the homeowner decides to cut that tree down, then it's up to his neighbors, basically, to complain. And I'm just kind of wondering, by what mechanism do they have to force him to replant that tree if he cuts it down? Is that just part of the HOA again?
Yes, it would be part of the HOA. And then ultimately, if they're not satisfied, they got to go to court.
Okay. That's it for Jim's comments. I have my own.
Go ahead.
I guess I've already answered those two, our comments earlier with respect to the grading. There's some concern still about the height of the fence on top of the wall plus the other wall underneath between lot 9, is it? The very northeasternmost lot. That's the one where we received a letter from the neighbor, and the neighbor was concerned about the retaining walls. And right. The setback, is there in this instance, is the normal setback 5 feet rear setback, or is it 3 feet
because it's... Normal rear setbacks are 10 feet.
Okay. And the height limit at the property line is basically 6 feet for a fence, right?
6 feet, 6 inches, yeah.
Okay. So this is somewhat of a little bit of unusual in that we have this series of retaining walls. It's an exception to some degree to create this tall wall.
I don't know how the retaining walls pertain to the fence height. The other retaining wall is on the other owner's property, so that wouldn't apply here.
But it's in the setback.
I'm not entirely sure.
Bill Robeson, County Planning. So the question is how that setup is going to look and how the heights are going to appear.
We're going to have a 5-foot fence on top of a plus or minus 3 foot, 2 foot, 3 foot. So we have a 7 or 8
right.
foot, six, 7 or 8 foot fence on top of a 3 foot retaining wall, effectively from the perception of the neighbor. So it's a total of about 10 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an exception?
Well, it's not really an exception. I mean, through this plan development, we can modify those standards for the height. And we normally look at the grade that's on, I guess it would be on the southern side, and then we measure from there rather than going down to the toe of the property below. So we have this set up every now and then when we have a tiered system. In a track.
I'm just asking. This is not an abnormal situation.
Okay.
Is what I'm getting.
It's not totally common, but we have it occur, you know, every 3 or 4 times a year on either individual properties or tracks.
I'm only belaboring it because the neighbor has brought it up to
sure.
some degree, and I'm just trying to let the public know that this isn't an unusual situation. You see this in many different tracks in many different neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And the home that can be built on this lot can be up to 35 feet tall, but it's only currently 25 feet tall.
Correct.
On some number of feet of fill, plus or minus 4 feet maybe. So that 4 feet plus 25 feet makes it 29 feet, which is still 6 feet lower than what's legally allowed on that parcel. So the fact that it's a two-story house, I know the neighbor was against that, and that's I have empathy for that situation, but the person developing the neighbor parcel is working within the zoning code, as I understand it, and that's what I'm asking for your confirmation on.
Yeah, I would confirm that. I would say you're correct on that.
Okay.
Thank so you. You're talking about that. Is there not a revised condition on that particular issue? On the fence on top of the wall?
I think we revised it so that there wasn't a separation between the existing wall and the new wall, that they would be right next to each other. So there wouldn't be this gap, kind of a no man's land.
Yeah, you put the fence on top of the wall, which is on the subject property rather than on the property line. The property line wall is that original lower retaining wall. And so that there wouldn't be this 3-foot this gap, you move the fence inboard onto the parcel.
Okay, and that's condition. Which condition is that?
I want to say 10H on page 4-9.
Right.
That's all my comments. Thank you.
Do we have questions or comments from other members of the commission? No. Commissioner Campbell?
Mine was on drainage, and it's been satisfied in my mind.
Okay. Commissioner Harrison?
I still have difficulties with a 4-foot, 6-inch retaining wall with a 6-foot fence, and then on top of that, a 3-foot retaining wall with a 5-foot fence. So it makes a 12-foot high fence in that man's backyard. The neighbor's backyard, right?
These all on the property you're referring to?
Right now, there is an existing 4-foot, 6-inch retaining wall and a 6-foot fence.
We have a graphic, don't we, on this?
I was going to put up the cross-section.
My understanding was that the 6-foot fence is going to go away on top of the retaining wall now and be replaced by that new retaining wall.
It may very well, and I'm not counting that 6-foot fence and what I figure is 12-foot. I'm counting only the 4-foot retaining wall, the 3-foot, and the 5-foot.
And then my understanding is also that the reason that retaining wall is there now is that the northern neighbor dug out his own backyard to create that retaining wall. So he's lowered the grade there by that amount. So that's,
but it's not just one house. It's a row of houses across there. Looks like to me.
Yes.
Anyway, that's just my concern.
Could you go over the...
So I just put up the cross-section provided by the applicant, which kind of shows from lots 7 and 8, which are the northeastern lots on the subject site, what it kind of looks like. I'm trying to point to it.
Try the other mic.
Press the button.
It's down the base, isn't it?
Yeah.
Down on the base to your right.
There it is. Okay. Is it working?
Yeah.
Okay. So this shows... Let me go to lot 8 since that's the one right along South Elm. So this is what the existing retaining wall and fence look like on lot 8. And this is a depiction of what the new retaining wall with a fence would look like. So
that creates a space between the existing retaining wall.
No, because they have a condition that they put on it that says that space will not be allowed. They'll move the retaining wall, and it will be there'll only be one fence there.
Yeah. And that tallest fence is on the neighboring property. Is that not correct?
There's
only the only one there.
There's already one.
That's my point. It's already there. Yeah.
Yeah. Right now there is a fence there.
Right
now there's a fence there that's on a retaining wall. And the fence looks like it's probably 5 feet high. That's what it says it is. On a 4-foot retaining wall. And that's what they have in the back now.
It's 9, okay.
So here's what I'm...
Correct? And then you're going to put a 3-foot retaining wall.
You want to come up to the mic, please?
And then a 5-foot fence on top of that.
Please come up to the mic. Yeah.
Sorry. I believe from what I just heard that the condition was that we were not going to put a fence on top of the retaining wall because you were going to leave it would have created a 3-foot void. So we will just be replacing the fence to the owner's liking, you know, that's on top of the original retaining wall. We'll still come in 3 feet just to tear us up, but there will be no more fences. So from the neighbor's property right now, it shouldn't feel or seem any different than it already is, other than they'll have a new fence.
Okay, so you're not going to put an additional retaining wall in?
We are going to be putting additional retaining wall, but we will not be putting an additional fence on top of that retaining
wall. So it'll step down?
Yeah. It'll just step down.
To the fence that's on top of the existing retaining wall, as I understand.
I can see it right here, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And like Eric did, he drew the line of what the original elevation was until the neighbor dug it down.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think that probably was dug down by whoever built those houses. It's not just one house. It's a row of houses.
And that line isn't exact. That line's just a given example.
And also after time, commissioners, with nothing there and the oceano sand just blowing and blowing and blowing, it's really fluffy down at that. You know, it's probably accumulated a foot or two at least over the years.
Yeah. I don't have anything else.
I don't mean to interrupt, but you had had a question about the Department of Real Estate and the CCNRs. I can just add to that a little bit.
That's where it's going to come from.
It'll also be part of the real estate contract.
Exactly.
As soon as somebody wants to make an offer on the house, it's part of the contract that we have to adhere to that's approved by the DRE that states, you know, I mean, old days, you know, real estate contract, I remember I bought my first house, was probably 3 pages. Now they're about 28 pages.
Right. That's what I was.
They have everything in there, so they're notified of every step along the way and what they're getting into. Also, we don't get a white until the end. We'll start off with a pink. Assuming the project goes through, we will then start the process with the Department of Real Estate. We'll get a pink slip that will allow us to take reservations, and we'll work through approximately a 120-day process that then we'll finally get the white and then the final public.
But my point was there will be notification
Absolutely.
At the outset that the realtor can depend on white or pink.
Through that process, the contract has to get approved by the DRE, and it's the only contract you can use.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Sorry.
While we have you up.
Yes, sir. I have to fill out my slip.
Yes, please.
I don't know. Does the applicant actually need to fill out a slip? Can you tell us roughly where you think the streetlights are going to be, just so Jim Irving doesn't think I've slacked on my job?
I'm sorry. When where?
Where you think the streetlights might be, or you don't know?
Yeah, I think I do. We would like one down at the end.
Put up the display.
We'll also work on that with Public Works. But I liked it down at the end.
Like lot 8, lot 9?
Yes, right down there at the end. And then the first one will either be up in the top where we'll have the guest parking, right at the south of lot 12.
Right.
Right over more, keep coming down. Right
a little blank spot.
Right in that area right there. That would be my best guess, but we'll work with the neighbors.
Where were you? I'm sorry, I missed where the cursor was.
Oh.
South of lot 12.
Right
on the
in that area.
Mm-hmm. The curve right there.
And then I think we might want to talk about the parking a little bit because you sounded kind of enthusiastic when we talked about
adding not really, but I mean I can do it.
Well, I like enthusiasm.
Well, yeah, why don't you show us where it is?
The guest parking right now, you have 3 spots. You have 1 spot over there. We can create another spot over in that area. And then we have 3 spots right there.
What's to stop somebody from landscaping that area? If
CCNRs, the homeowner association.
Oh.
And again, that leads back to the tree issue and who maintains and what they can do. We actually had a gentleman in Old Avocado, the first one. We had these beautiful trees, and he took them out. And the neighbors complained. I actually saw it, and I go, what's going on? Got a hold of the homeowners association, and they replanted, made him take those out and replanted. So they do watch that. Doesn't mean that something can't slip by, but they watch it pretty good. Because it'll be part of the Mr. Topping, it'll be part of the CCNRs, and you can't ever take that out.
So there are 3 separated spaces.
3 there.
Individual lots.
I believe there's 2 there or 3 there, and there's 1 up there. I cannot guarantee, but I can guarantee that we will work very hard with Stephanie and planning staff to put in 2 more. I don't know why we wouldn't be able to add 1 more on the top, and it might be difficult, but I see with what we might be doing, we might be able to add a second one down below. Also.
Will these be signed?
Yes, sir.
Stephanie, was this project because of affordability or inclusionary housing? Did it get parking reductions for any reason? So it's a totally standard project right now, and we're asking for an exception. We're asking for an extra give, basically, on your part by asking for more parking.
We're parked.
I don't think we need to demand more parking, but I certainly would love to see you at it. If it's possible.
Well,
I don't want to do anything outside.
Since the issue's been raised, here were my questions previously to Ms. Fuse. One is, what's the proposed curb-to-curb paved roadway width?
Let me.
Sure.
It's
20 feet.
Yeah.
And how does this compare? How does
back of sidewalk to back of sidewalk.
No, I mean paved width.
I know, but I'm going to get to it for you. It's a private road. It's always been per OCSD and the fire department standard. It's 28 feet back of sidewalk to back of sidewalk. We'll have a 2-foot rolled curb, so we'll have 18 feet of pavement.
18?
18 feet of pavement.
Okay. Now, that's different from what I understood, which was it was 20 feet. Is that not the correct figure? Which figure is correct?
Well, the plans show 20 feet, but that may include the rolled curb. That
it does. It includes the first foot of the rolled curb. You got about a foot of the rolled curb, sir, and then the bottom.
Okay. And what's to stop people from just driving right up over the curb and parking right in front of a house?
Fire department and the homeowner association. I mean, they're really. I mean, I'd lie to you if I told you there was. I mean, it's no parking. Everybody knows it. They self-police it very well. We've had, we've been dealing with Old Avocado Ranch, unfortunately, for about, 8 years now, and we've had no issues there. We've built 3 other projects with a similar, not similar, exact road width, and have had not any issues. So, that's the same thing. My mom lives in Arroyo Grande on West Cherry, and right by the high school, and people will pull up. But it certainly is a concern. But I think that I haven't ever seen it be a problem.
Do we have a condition for no parking signs?
No. We can add one.
I believe that comes with public works because, Mr. Honeycutt, if you could please add to that, but I know that in the other subdivisions it didn't come from planning, but before we could ever get done, we had to have the no parking, the speed limits, the street signs, and sorry, go ahead.
Actually, being that it's a private road, we would rely on the fire chief. The fire chief has authority to mark certain areas, no parking, fire lane, that kind of thing. Public Works would not have any authority to do that. And before we ever did anything, we'd have to bring it to the board for an ordinance. So being a private road, we would look to the fire marshal or the fire chief, 5 cities.
Okay, so this is 18 feet. And we're relying on the fire department to enforce the sign prohibition against parking up over the curb and sidewalk.
Or the sheriff's department, too, sir.
Basically, it's a PUD. I mean, it has all the parameters already in place.
Right.
They're all over the country. So
yes, sir.
You can't reinvent the wheel here.
No, what I'm trying to get at is that initially I was wondering why, before I actually looked at the site the other day, I was wondering why we just didn't put the interior street through, and then I discovered that there is no site distance at the connection there with South Elm. So that's a problem. That and the turnaround is something that we've been talking about. And I think the important thing is for it to happen, and I think we have a condition now that will assure that being happening. That turnaround is not just for fire trucks. It's for garbage trucks. It's for moving vans and whatever. And it's very important that that happens in a way that is reliable and not hit and miss. The 18 feet is basically what appears to be on Haas Lane throughout the other parts of the project, but it is very tight. Driving through there, it's very tight. The curb radii are very tight. This is 20. This is 18 feet versus the normal Mr. Honeycutt, what's the normal subdivision pave to pave, curb to curb paved width?
Well, again, if we were going to have parking, we would add 8 feet of pavement on each side of that. We would end up with, I believe we said 36 feet.
Yeah.
Is the standard going from memory. Mm-hmm. There have been times in the past where we would have rural, pretty well rural low-volume roads where the pavement width would only be 18 feet wide. So two cars can squeeze through there, particularly if you're going the speed you should be in on a street like this. But if somebody parks there, it will muck it up a bit. So the final word on that would be we would rely on the fire chief. If they can get their fire truck through there, then we'll be satisfied.
Well, I think the commission is trying to find a way to make this project possible with adequate safeguards, and so I would like to thank you, Mr. Gunner. I'd like to go over the conditions as proposed now in some detail, please. Ms. Hughes?
I'm sorry?
Could you go over the changes and conditions?
Oh, the changes?
Yeah.
The two that were handed out today are for condition 14. It's regarding drainage. And so what was removed was the words "or detained," so the drainage must be retained on the property. And then there were a couple sentences added to the end of condition 14, which was drainage shall be directed toward the interior of the project site to the greatest extent feasible, toward on-site basins and or vegetated swales able to accommodate all drainage flows created by the project. Drainage basins along lots 5 through 8 shall be located at the front of the parcels. No basins shall be located in fill, and drainage shall not negatively impact neighboring properties. And then,
Stephanie,
sorry,
can I ask you to put that up on the screen? We can.
Sure. Need to get out of here. So that's the drainage one that I just read. And then if we go down to condition 29, we added an I, and it would be that notification that no on-street parking is allowed within the subdivision. Garages shall be maintained for use as automobile or vehicle parking. Guest parking shall be accommodated in driveways or the, I guess we could add, 3 to 6, 3 to 5 guest spaces provided for the subdivision. Guest parking spaces are for the use by all owners and guests of the subdivision, not designated for use by any one homeowner.
Yeah, why don't we just go ahead and add in
three or more? Do it.
Three or more.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
And why don't we also add in signage? Because I think leaving it up to another entity is pretty iffy.
Commissioner or Chairman Topping, if I could comment, it's very standard that we work with the fire districts all over the county to have them give us conditions and requirements for fire signage and fire signage on the street that's sprayed on the street. So we could add that if you like, but I just wanted to let you know that it's a pretty routine interaction between our department and the fire entities.
Sure. Couldn't you say that signs will be posted in accordance with
sure.
five
yes.
cities fire authority?
Absolutely.
No parking signs.
Mr. Chair, just so that we can do well at implementing what you're talking about, sometimes you put it no parking posted on a sign. Sometimes you could stripe on the ground. Are you preferring one or the other?
Some physical indication that alerts drivers that they shouldn't be parking up over a rolled curb.
Thank you. That helps because I think in addition to the no parking, having a lot of signs posted present other problems. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Whatever is going to get somebody's attention who's behind the wheel is what I'm interested in, and how do we say that?
I would say most homeowners associations that I've been involved in for the last 30 years take their job real seriously. In fact, they take it too serious sometimes. So they will take care of their problems within their little subdivision.
Yeah, I can recall having been told to take a flower pot off.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, do we have some language in there regarding no parking?
I would suggest add a J that signage or paving treatments shall be provided in accordance with Five Cities Fire Authority standards.
That sounds
right. To notify drivers,
or just to prohibit on-street parking.
To prohibit on-street parking, yeah, that'd be. Thank you. That's helpful. Any other changes? And we have in the conditions what we talked about as far as the change, staff's recommendation on the fence on top of the wall. So that's built in. Okay? Yes.
Actually, just again to make sure we can implement, the way the conditions read now is that the people could put a 6-foot fence on in the back of their the back of any lot. And so I've kind of heard one thing that you didn't want that and another thing you did, so we could use some clarity, I think, on that. I might also add, when I recall the objection that was raised last month, it had more to do with people being in the, not so much looking through the fence, but being on the home on top, looking down at the home on the bottom. So the removing the fence might, I don't know, exacerbate the concern rather than solve it.
I agree with Frank, and I also think there was a bit of concern about creating a channel where people might hide between the two fences. Yeah. And I don't have a problem with a fence on top of the inboard or the more southerly retaining wall, because I'm also a little concerned that someone might fall off. I mean, we have a 30-inch, I think it's a 30-inch height. If it's more than 30 inches, we do need to have some sort of 3-foot fence minimum, just so someone doesn't fall off the wall into the interim terrace.
Who would maintain the gap then?
Well, that's the problem, I think. The existing fence, the existing block wall, or whatever the retaining wall is 4 foot 6 inches. That's what this says. And then you're going to add another foot or whatever, 2 foot, 3 feet, but you still need the fence on top of it. The problem was that it was going to be set back 3 foot and leave a gap between the two fences. If they just put the one fence up and then put the retaining wall away from it, that would be fine if it's a 2-foot retaining wall. It'd be okay with me.
Okay. Isn't that the new plan, Stephanie, to eliminate that gap?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're the commissioner for the district. That, so.
The way I understand it is the plan is to eliminate that gap between the two fences.
That's right.
Right. Yeah.
And that was okay. A concern. Mm-hmm.
Okay, just so it's clear for the record, could you just tell us again what the new wording says?
The condition 10H is the retaining walls and fencing along the northern property line shall not have a separation between the new fencing and existing fencing due to maintenance and safety concerns.
Okay. Any other questions, comments, discussion from members of the commission?
Are you ready for a motion?
Ready for a motion.
I make a motion that we approve this project.
Okay, I think can you fill in a little bit on the on the
with the additional changes and recommendations that's been made with the board today.
You want to prompt him, Eric, about the?
We usually read off the additional.
Sure, we'll get the wording of the motion.
Yep.
Actually, don't have to read the entire agenda item. Just the primary.
We just read the number. We move to approve.
Okay. Move to approve the lot line adjustment and track map, track 3059 with a conditional use permit, sub SUB 2013-00042.
With the
with the changes that were made by the Planning Commission today.
Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Look at this.
Sorry. Alona, would you please call the roll?
Can I just clarify for the record that the motion included essentially staff's recommended action, which would include adoption of the environmental document for this project?
Yeah, with the conditions as modified.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay.
Commissioner Harrison?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
Chairman Topping?
Yes.
I'd like to add that I have great empathy for builders lately.
Yeah.
All right. We're ready for, let's see, we have a continuance, I believe, on the agenda item 5 is requested. Is that correct? And we need a statement to that effect from staff.
Hearing item number 5 is a hearing to consider a request by Niner Winery Estates, LLC, to allow for a modification of their previously approved conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2013-00117, Supervisorial District Number 1, Project Manager Erlen Singwall.
Actually, the project manager is Holly Phipps. So, Bill Robeson, County Planning. This project has been requested to be continued by the applicant, and our department has concurred with that request. So,
do we have a date?
The date would be February 26th.
So I'll move to continue the item to February 26th.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Corona?
Can I add real quick? Sorry, keep chiming in here.
Sure.
For the record, it doesn't appear that there are any members of the public who wish to speak on that continuance. Is that correct?
Apparently not.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Harrison? Chairman Topping?
Yes. Okay, with that, we'll go to agenda item 6. Are there any, let's see, Ramona, you want to announce the
And we items? Have a couple of last-minute emails to hand out that we received last night.
Okay. You want to announce the item?
Yes. Hearing item number 6 is a hearing to consider a request by Richard C. Yingling and Verizon Wireless for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2013-00115, Supervisorial District Number 1, Megan Martin, or Erlen Singwall, Bill Robeson.
Thank you, Ramona, for adding all of our names to that project. Bill Robeson, County Planning again. Megan Martin was not able to be here this morning, so Erlen Singwall is going to be making the presentation in her place.
Okay, before we proceed, I'd like to ask if any commission members have any ex parte communications on this matter. No?
Yes, I drove up to the property 2 days ago to look at it.
Okay. Mr. Singwall.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. I'm Erlen Singwall, planning staff. This item is a request by Richard Yingling and Verizon Wireless for a conditional use permit to construct and operate an unmanned wireless communications facility. The proposed facility will consist of 9 panel antennas attached to a 55-foot-tall artificial pine tree, also known as a monopine. It would also include construction of a prefabricated equipment shelter that, as condition, would be required to be disguised to look like an agricultural-type structure. The project also includes a backup a diesel generator and a chain-link fence around the equipment area. There is a requirement for landscaping around the lease area to screen the chain-link fence and to partially screen the equipment. The project would also be required to improve an existing 12-foot wide access road to meet CAL FIRE standards that would that call out for all-weather access. In addition to that, the access road would be extended by about 500 feet at a 15-foot width to get to the proposed communications facility location. Here is the vicinity map. The project is located at 6269 Hog Canyon Road, about 2.5 miles northeast of Paso Robles. The project is in the rural residential land use category. This is the land use category map. Here's an aerial photograph. So we have about a 7-acre parcel developed with a single family home here. This yellow dotted line is that existing 12-foot wide access road, and the purple line represents where the 15-foot wide access road would be extended to the cell site location, which is right here. There are homes on the adjacent parcels. The nearest off-site home is located about 230 feet from the proposed communications facility. Here's a proposed site plan showing basically the same thing. Again, access road here to be improved to all weather and extended here to the lease area. Another site plan showing the boundaries of the lease area where all of Verizon's equipment and the monopine will be located. And this shows that in greater detail. Here are the landscaping shrubs that I referenced that will screen the chain link fence and help soften the appearance of the equipment and the base of the monopine. Here are the elevations of the monopine. It is conditioned to require the highest quality and densest branch count possible for a realistic appearance. Here are photo simulations from Hog Canyon Road. On the top is existing, bottom proposed. While there is not a lot of mature vegetation on the project site itself, you can see the monopine is generally consistent with the vegetative patterns that you would see as you drive along Hog Canyon Road, where you see pines and other tall trees scattered across the landscape. Here's another photo simulation. Again, top is existing, bottom proposed. And same thing here. From this view, you can see the full height of the monopine. As required by the ordinance, the applicant did submit an alternative sites analysis. There were no co-location opportunities within what the carriers like to call their search ring for this project. The search ring is the area that they're trying to cover, basically, or the area where they would have to locate a cell site in order to meet their coverage needs. So there were no co-location options. They looked at 16 different sites. Of all the sites that they looked at, this was the only one where they were able to get a willing landowner to lease property and also where they could achieve their coverage objective. And that coverage objective is illustrated by these maps. This one shows the existing levels of coverage. The project is located here where it says Hog Canyon, and this is the area where they are primarily trying to improve their coverage. So existing and proposed. And again, existing, proposed, so that it substantially improves coverage in that Hog Canyon neighborhood area. We just handed out a couple emails from neighbors outlining some concerns with the project. One such concern is the effects of the radio frequency emissions. The project did submit a radio frequency analysis prepared by a third-party engineer, and that analysis concluded that the project would emit less than 5% of the FCC limit for radio frequency exposure. And the county is preempted by federal law from denying a project or regulating a project on the basis of radio frequency emissions if the facility does submit evidence showing that they comply with those FCC limits, and that is the case here. There are also concerns about the visual impacts of the facility, mostly from the surrounding residences. Of course, the county's policies are in place to protect public views. In response to those concerns about the visual impacts, I'll note that it is a stealth design, and it's located 250 feet away from the nearest off-site residence. I talked a little bit yesterday and this morning to the applicant's representative about why they chose this location on the property for the monopine, and they explained that it was really balancing two things. One is to locate it as far as they could from any of the neighboring houses, but the other is that they had to have it at a certain elevation in order to meet their coverage objective. So that's how they came up with the location that they're proposing. And also there were concerns about noise. The noise generating equipment on any cell site is usually the AC units, and the noise study evaluated the noise from the AC units and concluded that it would comply with the 45 decibel limit. So with that, staff recommends that you adopt the mitigated negative declaration and approve the project. I'm available for questions.
Okay, does the commission, do any members of the commission have questions for staff at this point?
I'd like to hear from the public.
Okay. In that case, is the applicant here? And would you, before you forget, just remember to, yes, turn in your slip. Thanks. Give your name for the record.
Good morning. My name is David Downs, representing Verizon on the application that's before you today. Mostly just want to introduce myself and let you know that I'm happy to answer any questions you have. We've been working with staff for 3 or 4 months on this project, and I've had a chance to review all the conditions of approval, and we are in support of all the conditions of approval and would ask that you approve this project before you. And more than happy to answer any questions. I understand that some last-minute emails came in, and if you'd like me to address any of those issues, I'd be happy to do so.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the applicant? Apparently none. Is there anybody who would like to speak on this? Yes. And have you submitted a
speak?
Okay. It's on its way.
I've never talked over these. I'm the one that's right next door to this monster coming in, and they didn't take pictures off my deck.
Excuse me. Could you introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm Phyllis Borges. I'm at 6249 Hog Canyon Road. And anyway, I'm here because of the value of our property if we decide to sell. And also, they didn't take any pictures off my deck. And the Yinglings are very good friends of ours, too. But I just want to know if they can move it closer to their house or down below or something. Because we bought that property out there for the view. And now that's going to take that all away. So that's my concern.
Okay, any...
I have a question. May I, Mrs. Borges?
Uh-huh.
It seems to be a little difference here. You claim that's 70 feet from your front door, and I believe the information we got was over 200 feet.
I know. I don't know where I got that 70 feet, but it might have been when I was taking ones outside. But there's little kids at play right out there, too. We're concerned about that. They'll be playing right there by the tower. I'm just concerned about the value of my house and getting out on my deck and seeing this ugly thing out there, you know. And the trees all look alike out there, but then they came up with this thing about generators and all this stuff. And, you know, we bought it for the property and the video, so I'm a little nervous. That's all I had to say.
Okay.
Plus, I'm worried about our parking meter.
Okay.
I have one comment on this, and that is, what about the folks that live at 6249 Hog Cabin? I mean Hog Canyon, and that's you guys, right?
Right.
So that was my comment. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
I really wanted to know your opinion, so thank you for sharing.
Yeah, because it's a beautiful view out there, you know, and
you're definitely affected, in my opinion. You're immediately next to this thing.
Really? Right. I've got a couple pictures here if you want to see them.
We have an overhead here that Arlen could place those photos on the overhead.
Oh, sure.
Sorry.
Taking over your job. Making it easier. If you want to explain the photos, yes, that would be good. These are photos from your deck?
No, I've got one from my deck.
Okay.
Where is the tower going to be in these photos?
Where's the tower going to be in these two photos? Okay, I have a question. Where is the tower in these two photos? I mean, I know it's not there now, but it will be someday, maybe.
It's in the pictures.
Air Lansing Wall Planning staff. I'm going to let the applicant get up and see if he can identify where, because he's more familiar with the property than I am.
Yeah, is it possible to flip back to your PowerPoint and show the aerial image?
That's page 671, is it?
Let's go. There. So, which house are we?
This one here.
Do you want to state where you took the photos from?
It's right there where the red line is.
Right here?
So right at the corner.
I think that's it. Is that it, Gus? The two-story house there on the red line.
Can you put a cursor on the property then? Right there? Not the one out to the other way.
So this is the closest house.
Okay. This is I'm pointing to the closest house.
I can't tell.
These guys live directly at the corner there. I did a Google Earth topo sort of flyovers on this bit.
So it is here.
And that view, I think, that in your photos is from, basically, effectively from the corner of your property looking across to the southwest across this site. Their house is just slightly higher than the subject site.
Right. Right.
Yeah, it looks to me like that they were taken the kind of southern end of the two-story house that you just circled, looking
southwest.
I mean, no, but it's just a short way because our neighbors have horses out there and everything.
So the facility is located 250 feet from that house. Just to give you a little background, obviously the intent of this.
If I could interrupt, when you come to the mic, we need you to introduce yourself so that when we I have the minutes done. We're very accurate on those. If this moves on to some other hearing, so if you just introduce yourself each time you talk, that would be great clarification.
Absolutely, David Downs, representing Verizon Wireless.
So it's okay to stay up there, Mrs. Borges, if you want.
This is what's known as a relatively difficult service objective or a difficult search ring. The intent is to bring 4G LTE service to this rural community. The only way to do that is a new build facility. And that new build facility, because it's such a large area, needs to be located somewhere in the middle, which means it's got to be located basically on one of these rural residential lots. So there's no necessarily what you would consider easy solution. You know, there's no industrial zoned area or anything like that to select from. It's really all the same. The intent was to minimize impacts to all or to any surrounding property owners by maximizing the distance of the facility. But as you can see, these houses are roughly 400 or 500 feet apart from each other, so it's not that easy to separate the facility. So what we've done to minimize impacts is obviously we're going with the highest quality technology of stealthing with the densely branched monopine. And, of course, the landscaping that is being required by staff is also an excellent idea. But we're wide open to any other suggestions you may have as far as minimizing visual impacts. There were a couple of property owners that showed interest in having the facility on their property. This property was selected because it best suited the the elevation that was needed for the RF frequency. But, you know, like I said, we're wide open to any suggestions you may have.
Thank you.
I have a question.
So, Commissioner Campbell, you have a question.
Yes, I don't know if this is in your purview or not, but we're tiptoeing through some federal court rulings here. And you show on your dotted red, yellow, and green maps that this area has reception on the outdoor scope, but not on any other, and that's one of the reasons you're doing this. I guess it's hard a question to ask the right way, but how does this fit into the federal court rulings? If you just have is there a minimum under those standards, and would outdoors suffice, or would upgrades to have indoor use still fall in those standards?
Yeah, the red represents the area that Verizon does not consider to be, and I don't know where the FCC stands on this, but I know that Verizon absolutely does not consider that to be a standard of service that they're willing to.
Okay, so they're using the word standard of service in the red area that it does not comply.
Substandard.
Substandard, okay.
Commissioner Campbell, I may be able to provide some additional information on that issue. So for purposes of the Federal Telecommunications Act, we need to be concerned with whether Verizon has demonstrated what is called a significant gap in coverage.
That's where I'm coming from.
Exactly. And so that hasn't been parsed out in such a level of detail in terms of whether there really is a true significant gap in coverage for indoor versus outdoor, or even for 4G versus 3G. It's kind of a term of art, and I think that I would think it's up to your commission to kind of interpret that term, significant gap in coverage, and the way that you would like to essentially enable Verizon to service its customers, and balancing the issues of the neighborhood and the site that was chosen. There's additional steps that that the courts have said that local jurisdictions need to take if they want to consider a different location, perhaps, or even denial of the project. There's certain things that we need to look at and make sure we discuss before we head down either of those roads. So I hope that helps, as opposed to uses it more.
Excellent information, Ms. McDonald. Thank you. Very helpful.
I guess my question would be, what would be the envelope for possibly shifting the location of this particular facility and still have functionality as far as the project objective is concerned? You're talking about elevation, and you seem to have located this very close to a neighboring residence.
Chairman, hoping to sort of help guide that discussion, in the back of my presentation, I do have this slide which shows an elevation map here to the right to represent the topography. So you can see the yellow and orange areas would be the steeper sloping areas. And I don't know if the applicant wants to respond, but I just wanted to bring this up in case it helps him describe the topographic limitations.
Well, I wasn't thinking about slope as much as elevation, up or down. The question is, how far could you move this on this parcel, mm-hmm. and it retain an elevation that would still make it mostly functional?
I drove up there, and it's a rather steep driveway that goes all the way to the top right where the house is. So it's a very narrow plane across the top that would reach the desired elevation. The rest is all a downward slope to Hog Canyon, and the driveway is steep going up.
It's a little promontory there, right, with that one house.
Correct.
To the west.
Correct, right.
David Downs. If you take elevation out of the question, which of course you can't, but hypothetically, I mean, you can see from that photo that it's very difficult. If you pick anywhere on that parcel, you're going to be closer to, there's three homes within, you know, a few hundred feet of the parcel. So in any revised location, you're going to have a similar issue with a different property owner, essentially. So that was kind of what I was getting at earlier with this being a difficult search ring service. You know, you've got increased number of people needing 4G LTE service. You know, they're using it for their internet service inside their homes. You know, with the red on that map that you see, the good outdoor coverage, absolutely, they wouldn't have the ability to use, you know, their smartphone or their computer or, you know, inside their home at all. They don't at this time. So the intent of this project is to bring that service to this area, and the only way to do so is to kind of fit it into the most appropriate place possible. If you were to expand that image out, you'd see that it's a large area where houses are basically roughly, you know, every 400 or 500 feet. So it was really a matter of picking the least intrusive area. We feel that we've done that. Hope that you see it that way as well.
Commissioner Meyer?
Just out of curiosity, what kind of income stream can an owner of a lessor of a facility like this expect on a monthly basis?
Safe to say that that's considered proprietary information, but
approximately.
I'll give you a range, somewhere between $600 and $1,500 a month.
Okay, but all I'm bringing that up is that if a property owner in a location is receiving an income stream, it's effectively a business in my mind, and if they're going to locate a business on their property, in my mind, they should be locating that business near their property, not on their property line nearest the neighbor that's adjacent to it. It seems like if you're receiving profit on something, to take away from somebody else's enjoyment of their parcel, I have some questions about that. I don't know how to respond to that. But
I know where you're coming from, but and I don't know what your Google search flying over showed you, but one thing that really stuck out in my mind is the freestanding conifers, and you can see them on page 6-70. And they're quite striking. They're not eucalyptus trees. They're not bushes. They're not oak trees. They're predominantly pines and other conifers sticking right up in the air and, quite frankly, look an awful lot like the faux tree that they're planning on putting.
Phyllis Borges, I mean, anybody's welcome to come to my house and look out on a deck. I mean, I don't think anybody would buy the property seeing this thing out in front. That's what I'm concerned about.
Okay.
The only concern I have.
Sure. Well, we thank you for your...
I'm not, you know, I love the Englands. They're sure. Very good neighbors.
Sure. Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Borges, and thank you to the applicant. We'll bring it back to the commission for further discussion. I guess my question is it possible to move that thing to the west a little bit on site? To get greater distance, so you might share the pain between, so to speak, between the two homes that are within the vicinity.
Erlen Singwald, planning staff, your commission certainly can condition it as such to move it in any direction. We probably would want to hear from the applicant just to see how he believes that would, you know, impact the coverage objectives. Your commission certainly could condition it. I did have, if Ramona could, okay, it's up here. Just one thought that came to mind. It sounds like the view that's being impacted is, you know, this direction here, you know, looking from the house straight into the location of the monopine. Looks like there's already some possibly, you know, tall shrubs, vegetation here, blocking views out this way. So perhaps if it were located, 20, 30 feet to the east, it may be less of an impact on their view. And wireless communications facilities are essentially exempt from setback requirements when it's locating that facility in the least obtrusive location, and we can make that finding here.
So, there is some screening around the base, but it's not going to be it would not obstruct the view of the monopine, obviously. So.
Right, yeah.
So are there Commissioner Meyer and then Commissioner Harrison?
First off, I think I'd recommend that maybe in the future staff always include a topo map with these applications. I end up always kind of wondering. I look at it online or look at on topographic maps that I gather when I'm doing my research, but they're in here in the meeting. I don't have a topo to refer to, and so it's really helpful to have it. So I would like to suggest that. I don't know how we do that from a staff perspective, but always in a cell site add the topo map so we can more clearly understand where's high and where's not high and where's a steep slope, et cetera. It makes it a lot simpler.
Maybe we could note that for the record in the minutes.
And then we've had this come up quite a bit in the recent years, at least the idea of one person's cell site being too close to another person's house and the noise associated with the AC or the generator. The FCC doesn't really allow us to worry too much about the radio emissions because they're within some threshold. But the noise is, when you live in an area that's so remote, you know, 45 dB from zero is a big difference if it's on and off and on and off, and you will hear that. I can hear 5 dB at night in my house difference, you know, when someone's far away with something coming on and coming off and coming on. And in the middle of the night, that it's a big difference from silence. I've mentioned in the past that I would like the cell companies to come in with better devices, let's call them, better antennas. At this point, these big fake trees, yes, they look like a tree, but they look like a Disneyland fake tree. It doesn't look like a tree, really. It looks like it's trying to look like a tree. I don't know if that makes sense, but this whole fake tree thing, the water towers are a wee bit better, but they still look like a fake water tower, but it's a wee bit better than this big, giant fake tree. From the distance, a fake tree is fine. Like you say, it works in the skyline, but to the immediate neighborhood, it's just a giant fake tree. So I'm a little... I don't know how to go with that. I'm stuck on this one. I really don't like impacting one neighbor with another neighbor's gain. If the Yuengling's located this thing right on next to their house, or 40 feet, 50, 60 feet closer to their house, where there's a little bit less in the face, and because I can't tell the difference in the height because there's no topo, I don't know how high the Borges house is relative to this site.
A little higher.
I thought it was about 40 feet maybe from what I could tell, the elevation change from this site to your house.
What if you moved it closer to the Yuengling house?
Two ways, huh?
I mean, in my mind, it's not the cell company's not going to be happy about this, but I'd lower this thing down as low as I could and put a site on this side of the hill and a site on that side of the hill, and then you don't have these 80-foot or whatever the height is. I don't remember the height trees. You just have two separate sites that are 20 feet tall, and they're out of the immediate neighborhood's viewshed, let's say, but they're still accomplishing the goals of the cell phone company. And yes, that would mean two cell sites to deal with, but it wouldn't create the visual noise, let's call it, in the neighborhood. And I'm probably on the edge on this one to some degree, but that's how I feel.
Okay, Commissioner Harrison.
I just wanted to know what the distance and the difference in the distance between the two houses were. Is it closer to the neighbor's house or closer to the owner's house?
It's closer to the owner's house.
By how much?
I have an exhibit here. Let's see. This is from the noise study.
I just wanted you to show that slide. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, Commissioner Campbell.
From time to time, we get this comment on other hearings, including this one, and I'd like to address it. Don't mean to be anecdotal, but having been a real estate broker for almost 40 years, the trend nowadays is an awful lot of people. I have a daughter and a son-in-law that work entirely out of their house,
And the trend of people nowadays is to seek out property that has this type of service so they can do their business out of their house or just their hobby out of their house if it's on a computer. So I don't buy into the property value being lowered at all. In fact, it may be enhanced.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Campbell. Commissioner Harrison.
Also, I have one other thing to say. They just put one of these new ones in close to where I live, and it's in a grove of pine trees that are standing in a row, like four pine trees, and you're sitting on the road like 200 feet away. You can't tell which one of them is the tower. They've came that far. I mean, stopped down there the other day, and so my wife, I says, tell you which one of those is the tower. And she honestly couldn't tell the difference, and she's not. So, I mean, the older ones, like that they've got three blocks away from this one by the church, you can tell when it's absolutely quite visible that it is a cell tower. But the new ones really blend in. Anyway, that's it.
I would just love to be able to know which type. We've never been given an exhibit that shows this is going to be tree A from company A. We've always been told it's a new one or it's an old one, and I don't know whether it's a new one that looks good or a new one that looks bad. And so that was my quandary. It does look like the tree is 55 feet tall at the tallest, and it's approximately 40-something feet below the elevation of the neighbor's house. So it's really only 15 feet up within there.
I think the simulation on page 623 is a pretty definitive one. And you can see the pine trees I've been talking about kind of stand alone out there.
Yeah, that's from Hob Canyon. I think the question for staff is, did you look at any alternative locations, or did the planner whose project this is, look at any alternative locations on the Yingling site that would lessen the effect, at least on the Burgess property. Since the current owners of the Yinglings apparently do not have a similar concern as long as they own the property.
No, we just evaluated the project where it was proposed.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Commissioner Meyer that it's difficult to kind of micro-evaluate a project like this without topography. It's because since topography is a key factor in this, presumably, in the question, we don't really know what the difference in, say, 10-foot elevation versus, say, 50 feet more would actually do. So normally we get these proposals, and it's not quite so up close and personal. It's a little more of a distant issue.
Mr. Chair, as you were talking, I was... we're looking at some other options for locating the cell site on the property. And based on the photographs that the boards provided, it appears if the monopine were relocated further to the south here, about where the 150 is on this aerial, that would be less impactful on their view, and it could even be partially backdropped by these trees or bushes here.
Even for the Yinglings, it would be a little better spot as far as
it could
view.
Be.
Could be.
Yeah.
I think it's good mitigation.
If the commission were to go in that direction, we would definitely need we would have to add a condition for a revised radio frequency analysis, because as we move it closer to a house, that could change those conclusions. But I'm sure it would still be well within those FCC limits.
Sure. Would the applicant be open to, say, a continuance to explore alternate locations on site?
David Downs, I'm sorry, I missed that.
Would you be open to continuance by the commission to allow you to explore alternate locations on site, namely moving the monopine towards the Yingling residence.
So and I would be open to a condition of approval that I'd be happy to kind of hash out the language with you, but it sounds like what we were just discussing with staff and the neighbor would be a condition that read something like the location would need to shift, you know, blank number of feet to the southeast. So we'd have to obviously fine-tune that and figure that out, but I would be open to such a condition, yes.
Okay, and staff, is a continuance needed to effectively manage this question, can you do it on the fly?
I think we could just write up a condition on the fly to
bring it
capture
back
that. Yeah.
After take a break and
yeah, that'd be perfect. It's okay. Around break time. Right?
Do we want to talk about the number of feet we're thinking of?
Commissioner Meyer, do you have a suggestion? Or Commissioner Campbell, I see your light on.
I was going to suggest the southeast situation, but I also had a question for the applicant. It was suggested that we may have to review the area as far as the coverage, et cetera. Is that a major problem for you?
As far as the topography?
No, as far as the signal. And also the points of the
topography's effect on the signal, yeah.
Well, also the point of the frequency waves or whatever you call them. Is that a big issue to do?
Depending on the wording of the condition, I think as long as it's not too far, because you are getting down the hill a little bit as you go south. But as long as it's not too far, I'm pretty sure that I can get our RF engineer to accept it. What it'll effectively do is that red to green maps that you were looking at, it will shrink that green a little bit. But it's a compromise that I think is better than no service in this area. So.
You would think the people that are in the remaining green would appreciate it.
The hope. And my belief is that we can still encompass the entire community with this small shift. You're only going to be talking about a couple of feet in elevation change.
Okay. That's
so that change will be very minor.
Okay.
And the electromagnetic field would be studied in that same analysis?
I'll say that again.
The electromagnetic field impact would be studied in the same analysis
As
it moves closer to the residence?
The RF engineer will take a quick look at the new location, and they'll basically produce for themselves new red and green maps to see what it looks like, and we'll make sure that it works before we submit a building permit application to proceed. Yes, and if it doesn't, we always have the option to appeal with a change or submit a new application.
What is typically the distance that you would want to have one of these towers from a residence? What's the minimum distance?
This technology covers an area of about 1.5 to 2 miles.
No. I mean, with respect to this thing is directly next to the Yingling house, how far away should it be to be seen?
Every jurisdiction is a little different, but I would say that the residential setback average is about 250 feet, roughly. Sometimes it's 200, sometimes it's 300. So I'd say about 250 feet is the average. We try to be as far away as possible. And then the other option here, it would be moving this facility to the west so that 520 feet and 230 feet, those numbers kind of come together and more even out. But I think the solution that we were discussing, moving it southeast, is better given the
photos. You'd be less than 150 feet then from the Yingling's house. Is that problem?
Once we shift it, it'll be more like 120 feet from the...
So my question is that within the safe guidelines of a facility like this for a residential unit?
As was mentioned by staff, this facility is currently 5% of the allowable levels at the closest point on the ground. We'll still be well within the FCC's guidelines.
Mr. Myers, over in 46, we approved one, and I know the people very well. It's just virtually in their backyard. It can't be more than 56 feet.
And in Cambria, we did it next to those motel units.
Yeah,
literally 10 feet from the room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Also, one small comment. So the report says that that's at the closest point on the ground, you're 5% of the allowable level, but it's actually only about 2.5% of the allowable levels inside the nearest house. Mm-hmm. So that's 150 feet away. inside at the nearest house, standing in the second story bedroom there, you'd be at 2.5% of the allowable level. Small shift, we're still going to be well below.
So then my recommendation would be to talk about moving that thing to more like 100 feet from the Yuengling's house, which would make it 280 feet plus or minus, which would take it 50 feet farther away from the neighbors, mm-hmm. and also some number of feet down slope, so that perhaps they would only be seeing the top of the tree to some degree down the slope rather than...
So down by down slope, are you talking about...
To the south, it looks like southeast.
To the southeast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Over closer to the property line?
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
So it would swing around behind the trees that are on the mm-hmm. Burgess property and down.
Yeah, approximately where Arlen's yeah. cursor is there.
Okay. we can do this given the correct language, and so we're going to take a 15-minute break and ask staff and the applicant and the, to work out a proposed condition which would modify this location. Is there any further comment before we take a break? If not, we'll see you back in 15 minutes. My apologies for the delay here, getting restarted. What has staff come up with relative to a recommendation?
So staff has some revised conditions to propose. I'll just go ahead and, well, I have them up here. I'll go ahead and read it to the record. So we would change condition number 2 to read, at the time of application for construction permits, the applicant shall submit to the Department of Planning and Building for review and approval a revised site plan, equipment plan, antenna layout plan, and architectural elevations. The revised plan shall reflect the following changes. A. The proposed monopine and associated equipment shall be relocated approximately 30 feet to the southeast such that it is backdropped by the existing conifer trees surrounding the on-site residence as viewed from the residence at 6249 Hog Canyon Road. And then we propose the new condition number 3, which states at the time of application for construction permits, the applicant shall submit a revised radio frequency analysis evaluating the proposed project at the revised location for compliance with applicable FCC public exposure limits. And during our break, the applicant was able to speak to one of his RF radio frequency people, and they indicated that if they were to relocate the monopine about 30 feet to the southeast, they'd lose about 6 feet in elevation, and that would still provide them with sufficient coverage to meet the project's objectives. And, of course, the applicant can elaborate on that, too. But that's how we came up with the 30 feet.
Okay. And from the Borges house, then it's behind the shrubbery and brush and trees and so forth. So the tree is beyond their shrubbery, so it kind of falls into the background of the, I don't know whether it's trees or bushes, I'm sorry. But
yeah, that's the intent, to move it over here so that when viewed from the house, it's going to be backdropped by, mm-hmm. by these. And also I think we have some taller conifer-type trees located here that it would blend in with.
Number 2 that we're worried about.
Yeah, but there is shrubbery on the house that's marked number 2, which is the Borges house, right?
That's that shrubbery we want to get behind.
The idea is to get behind that.
Yeah, both.
Yeah, both.
Well, to get it behind this, and then also the visual impact would be a lot less if it's backdropped by these ones here.
Yeah, okay.
It'll appear just to blend in with the... Okay. The trees, and it won't block an unobstructed view.
Gotcha. Okay.
And the intent is not so much on the exact 30 feet. It's more to be within the sight lines of those other.
Yeah, right. We want it to be more performance based, not exactly 30 feet, right. And they've met the requirement.
Okay. Okay. Are there any other thoughts or comments from members of the commission on this?
I'm ready
for a motion.
Yes, I'll make a motion to adopt the Mitigated Native Declaration ED14-006 in accordance with the application provisions of the CEQA, Public Resources Code 21000 at SEC, and approved conditional use permit DRC 2013-00115 based on the findings in Exhibit A and the conditions as just modified listed in Exhibit B.
We have a motion, and do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Meyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Harrison?
Yes.
Chairman Topping?
Yes. All right, thank you. Appreciate all the effort and input. With that, I'll entertain a motion to take all testimony and documents into the record. Do you have a motion and a second on that?
So made.
I'll second. Let Jim second.
I don't care.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None.
Motion to adjourn?
Yes, to adjourn the meeting until the next meeting on
second.
February 5.
Second.
You got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. No opposition. Thank you very much, everybody. We'll see you next week.